They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners. Maybe I shouldn't have taken... I feel like I've been taking a lot of the intros recently. But anyway, welcome back. I'm Nathan Mogley-Ines, joined as always by Elliot Mogley-Ines. This is Magellan's at the Movies, and we're going to do a little bantering here. Elliot, I'm excited to hear your thoughts, because when I said this is what we were going to banter about, you kind of groaned. So there's two big... new movie trailers for two of what's sure to be two of the biggest movies from 2025. That is Fantastic Four: The First Steps, which is the MCU Fantastic Four film, as well as Gareth Edwards coming back to science fiction dinosaur adjacent stories with the Jurassic World Rebirth. Elliot, you've watched these trailers. You are a huge fan of both of these properties. You've loved everything. What did you think of these two trailers, Elliot?
Well, I think that this may have to be where my fandom comes to an end, honestly. I know. But yeah, I the Fantastic Four trailer, I mean, it was all right. I have no feelings towards the Fantastic Four. I have no feelings towards Marvel. So the trailer was really just, it didn't tell us much about what the movie was going to be. It was more like a trailer for the movie's tone and feel, which was very campy, very innocent, kind of a bit like the Superman trailer in that it was hearkening back to like Silver Age comics. I think that's the age.
Yeah, because Silver Age is after Seduction of the Innocent.
Oh yeah, great book. That's a must read.
Have you read it?
No.
Well, I don't know. I won't put it past you.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, of the two, I think that Fantastic Four has the much stronger chance because the trailer for Jurassic World Rebirth did nothing for me. I mean, my goodness. It just looked as generic a movie as a trailer is capable of reproducing. I have no idea. Well, I know why Jurassic Park movies continue to be made, because the Jurassic World movies were extremely popular and extremely successful for how critically panned the last two were, and even the first one was to a certain extent, that all three of them made solid money. So
they made over a billion. Three of them made over $1 billion.
I mean, that's... that is one of the worst sentences I've ever heard in relation to a movie. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give up all hope because I think Gareth Edwards is a good director and it's got Mahershala Ali in it, and I love Mahershala Ali, but as it stands right now, the trailer, I was like, oh my goodness, this is so lame. This is just nothing.
Yeah, I would agree. I was excited for this movie. I'm maybe a bigger Gareth Edwards fan than you are. I really liked the creator, and you didn't really like the creator, but I was excited to see what he would do. His Star Wars movie is really good, in my opinion. All of his movies are... all of his movies that I've seen feel very much like the product of someone who cares about what they're doing, regardless of if it's an original idea or if it's just a property for an established franchise. So I was excited for this. Yeah, this looked like ChatGPT wrote... I don't want to throw out... It looked like AI wrote it, but it looks like an incredibly generic Jurassic Park movie. I mean, the plot seems to be almost identical to the plot of at least two or three other Jurassic Park movies, which is really frustrating because it feels like it shouldn't be that hard to write a semi-original plot about people running away from dinosaurs or something. And yeah, like you said, Mahershala Ali, an actor I really, really like, as well as Scarlett Johansson, who's a very talented actress, seem to have been fed the worst lines in the history of the world. And maybe this trailer is just like hyper fixating on the worst parts of the movie, because there were good moments in the trailer. It looked like the action set pieces looked cool, the special effects on the dinosaurs looked really, really good. So I think there is going to be good parts of this movie, but every time the character spoke, I wanted to die. It was awful. Terrible lines.
Well, do you want my theory on why Jurassic Park has gone downhill with every installment, the only minor exception being Jurassic World?
Sure.
I think that Jurassic Park has been mistaken as, like, essentially a spectacular summer blockbuster movie, which it was, but I think at its heart, it was a lot smarter, and just the action set pieces that you were talking about in Jurassic Park were so much more restrained and scary than the ones that followed. Like, with each installment, they've been getting bigger and stupider as there's bigger dinosaurs and more emphasis on, like, fights and destruction, and the dinosaurs have increasingly become movie monsters, which I don't think they were ever meant to be. When we talked about Jurassic Park, one of the things that I talked about most favorably was how the dinosaurs felt and acted like animals rather than monsters. And yeah, just give me the simplicity and the tension of the Tyrannosaurus Rex escape scene with the jeeps over some big blowout chase with guns and velociraptors through a crowded city street any old day of the week, and twice on Sunday.
All right. Well, and then as for my thoughts on the Fantastic Four trailer, I think I'm maybe a little more pepped up than you are about this. I thought this trailer looked really good. I thought it looked like a unique tone. I agree, it looks like Silver Age comics, very silly. I thought the stuff it chose to highlight of the Fantastic Four, or at least Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm interacting just as they're talking about their family, I thought that was really good. A lot of it just looks good, which isn't so, like, a lot of Marvel movies have just looked terrible recently, and even Deadpool and Wolverine, which, you know, some people liked quite a bit, even that movie I think does not look great. So I'm excited for Fantastic Four. Maybe they'll have finally cracked it. Although, you know, we'll see.
That is true. That's something that I hadn't thought about, but you are right that, like, the Thing looks really good, and Galactus's head looks nice, and it just has a nice, clean, sharp look to it.
Yeah. I saw someone, I didn't see it because I'm on Twitter, I just saw it because someone posted it somewhere.
I like how you had to qualify that. Well, we are not on Twitter, just so you know.
I've never been on Twitter, to be clear.
Neither have I.
But I saw a thing that was a screenshot from the trailer, and it was like, oh, this looks like, you know, it looks so fantastic. It looks like big budget filmmaking.
Hey,
and I'm like, yeah, it should. Like, the fact that Marvel movies have looked like trash for the last 3 years is a huge indictment on them. They're spending millions of dollars to make movies that look worse than people who spend, you know, like $10 million. Like, The Creator looks better than 80% of Marvel movies, and it costs 10% of the thing. I don't know if those numbers are accurate, but that's how it feels.
Yes. Did you see the poster that people think? I mean, it looks AI generated to me. Marvel has said that it's not. I would not put it past them to just be lying about it, because if it's not, it was very poorly made.
Well, see, and this again, it's like, even if it's not AI, yeah, there, it looks like there's blatant levels of polish not applied to the poster. And it's like, look, if you're the biggest movie franchise in the history of the world, surely you can afford to pay someone to make a good poster. Like, why? It has to be, I don't know, it feels like it has to be like they're embezzling money or something. At what point do we say the money going in does not match the quality of the product and we gotta get someone to investigate it?
I agree. There is no excuse to be cutting corners with the budgets that, I mean, just with the revenue that these companies have, that Disney has. There is no reason to be to not be putting the money that you need to into the project.
Yeah. That's the movie news from this week. Let's pivot here to talk about our movie. Elliot, I'm really excited about this episode. So in case you're unaware, or, you know, we're not informed, a couple weeks ago, Movies lost one of the greats, one of the people who's often described as one
oftenly.
Of the greats, oftenly. That would be David Lynch, passed away a couple weeks here. And I thought, what better reason than that to revisit his movies, talk about him. We've never really talked about him on the podcast, I don't think, in any significant amount of time, certainly. So today we're covering Mulholland Drive, which I would say is probably his most well-known film, maybe his most well-known work, although I think Twin Peaks might be close. He was known for surrealism, a certain type of surrealism that was labeled Lynchian surrealism, in kind of a similar way to Kafka, getting Kafka-esque into the vernacular. So if you've never seen Mulholland Drive, it somewhat obliquely follows the story of an aspiring actress who comes to Hollywood to, you know, become famous, and encounters a woman who's recently been in a car accident and has amnesia from that car accident, and these two kind of try to figure out what's happened to her, all the while director is kind of struggling to get his movie together. And then there's also kind of twists and turns that reveal different layers to the reality of what we might be seeing in this movie. It's classic Lynchian sort of things. Elliot, I'm excited to talk about this movie because I watched this for the first time a couple years ago and I liked it a fair amount. I would say it's probably my favorite David Lynch movie. I am not a huge Lynch fan. I don't really love Blue Velvet, and Eraserhead is kind of not my favorite. Also, his version of Dune is crazy. It deserves to be seen just for how wacky it turned out, although I don't think that's really his fault. But I'm really excited for this episode because when I rewatched this yesterday, I enjoyed it way more than I was expecting to. I think there's a ton of different like details and layers and stuff, and so if regardless of how you feel about this movie, if you love it, I'm excited for this episode. If you hate it, I'm so excited to argue with you about this. So Elliot, why don't you jump in here and give your first thoughts here on this
Man, what a sign of success it is, or it must be, to have your name become a word.
Yeah.
I apologize. I didn't hear a lot of what you were saying because I was thinking about all the names that have become words. He must have been really proud of himself. unless you're like the Marquis de Sade, in which case his name became sadism. So
that
speaks
tough
for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this movie, I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed either way, Nathan, because I neither hated nor loved this movie.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, my experience with it, this is the first time I've ever seen it. This is the first time I've ever seen a David Lynch movie, by the way.
Yeah.
And my experience with it was tumultuous. I would say for like the first hour or so, it was just barely being held together by... It's kind of set up two dueling plot threads. One about Betty and Rita and trying to find out who Rita is. And one about Adam, a film director whose movie appears to be... is being meddled with by aliens or mobsters or something. And it's very brisk. And I think that if the scenes were like even half a minute longer, I would have hated it. But it is so fast. It is moving at such a clip that none of the things that were bad about it were given enough time for me to be like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty bad. And also the storyline with Adam was vaguely funny at times. And then, I would say from the moment when Betty and Rita start a romance to about like halfway through this little coda that comes at the end of the film and kind of redefines and recontextualizes what's come before it, that segment I despised.
Oh, interesting.
I was out at that point. I was like, this is trash. This romance is stupid, and I don't care about anything that's happening. And then for the last like 15 minutes, suddenly my enjoyment just like shoots up as I kind of realize more about what's going on and start to like do a little bit of theorizing. And so by the end of the movie, it's honestly hard to say where I was at. I've spent a lot of time since then. That was last night, thinking about it. And I do think that ultimately where I've kind of landed is that this movie's a unique thought experiment. I'm glad that I watched it, but I can't see myself ever really watching it again. And I think that there is a lot about it that is not great, or decisions that were made that I can't really see my way around. And just generally, I think that I've been left a little bit cold by the movie.
Interesting. Well, I think I'm glad to hear that you liked that last 15 minutes, because I think that was when my enjoyment peaked as well, as we're seeing all of these things that connect to what we've seen previously, and like you said, kind of changes how we view what we've already seen. That there's going to be spoilers here in this review, obviously, but about this coda that you talk about is for the last, I don't know, 40 minutes of the movie, it appears to show...
It's more like 25 to 30. Oh, it's 30. Very brief.
Okay. The last
I only know because I happened to pause the movie at that point.
But this last section of the movie appears to take place in either... reality, or it depends on what like way you want to interpret the movie or how you want to see the film, but in my mind at least, the last 20 minutes appears to show reality or something that really happened, as opposed to the first 2 hours of the movie, which is more implied in my mind at least to be somewhat of a dream of Betty's, who... that Betty's not her real name, but for the purposes of clarity, we're going to call
Naomi Watts.
Yeah, we're going to call Naomi Watts's character Betty, and we're going to call Laura Haring's character Rita throughout the review, regardless of which version of them we're talking about.
I'm not sure I'll be able to do that.
Well, I can't remember all these names, but anyway, and so this last portion of the movie is really fascinating to me in how it recontextualizes the beginning of the movie and kind of provides a window into some of the emotional properties of the film. And I think you know, one of the first things I want to say is that I'm not huge on movies where the metaphor is the whole thing. That I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, right? That I like it when the metaphor is what's really happening in the film. Spoilers for Whiplash here, but Whiplash is a perfect example where the thematic metaphorical thing that's happening is Andrew is in a toxic relationship with fame and prestige, and the literal actual thing that's happening is he's in a toxic relationship with his professor. And so I'm not really normally a huge fan of movies like Mulholland Drive, where a lot of it is maybe a metaphor, is maybe representative of something, but doesn't actually represent anything that's real. I think a great example of that is like Barton Fink, that I cannot be bothered to interpret any part of Barton Fink, because I'm like, if you're just throwing metaphors at the wall, like, you can make up any nonsense. If you're like a hip-hop fan and you've seen Kendrick Lamar stans like come up with the most ridiculous nonsense to explain some stupid tiny thing that Kendrick Lamar did, it feels like that, where it's like they're not, the artist isn't creating anything novel. They're relying on the audience to make up some nonsense for them. I feel like Mulholland Drive is different from those things because this last section has so many neat little details that tie back to what happened previously that it feels very clear to me that David Lynch had a vision for this movie, has a clear, coherent, like, plot and coherent idea that he is presenting with this film. I just don't know if I necessarily get all of that coherent plot or understand every piece of that, but because there's so many pieces of evidence, in my opinion, that there is one of those, I really enjoyed this movie. So that's kind of my opinion on some of the surrealism and some of, I think, the most instantaneous things that you'll recognize when you watch this movie, that it's surreal, that portions of it don't make sense.
Well, I don't know. I think that this movie is a little bit more similar to Barton Fink or...
Don't say Enemy.
I'm not going to say Enemy, although that is a good one. I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Oh.
Than... Or I think it's a little bit more like those movies. Certainly in terms of, like, this is kind of pretentious.
Mm.
I agree. My interpretation of the coda was that what we had seen before was like a death hallucination or a dream or something of Betty / Diane.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was like, oh, well, this explains a lot. Like, this explains why her romance with Rita is so trash. Because it really just relies on Rita having an unquestioning and inexplicable adoration of this woman that she's never met, and like a total dependency on her, because that's what Diane wants. That in the real world, Diane is kind of just a bit player in a movie that Rita / whatever her real name was, I can't remember, is in, and she had a relationship with Rita that ended, and she's clearly obsessed with her. And so in this dream, it makes perfect sense that that Rita would be like, oh my gosh, I love you, and also not have a single thought in her head.
Yeah.
And it explains other things, like Adam being so harried and having such constant bad luck because Diane / Betty, I'll just call her Betty. Betty, Betty sees him as like an enemy,
yeah,
or a competitor for Rita's affections. So in her fantasy, Adam is being constantly pushed around and stuff.
Beaten up by
yes,
guys who are having an affair with his wife.
Yeah. Charmingly sympathetic affair partners.
It felt like a Coen Brothers character, kind of.
It did. And there were a lot of moments in this movie that I thought were Coen-y. So there's a lot of, like, there's just in there's other minor things that, like, of people that Betty sees or names that she hears that she incorporates into this dream or death hallucination or whatever. And that is, like, the only way that I can like this movie is through that interpretation. And yet, here's the problem. Is that I think that that's all neat, that's all clever, but it's all in service of a character who I don't really find all that interesting, a conflict that I don't find terribly compelling, and just in general, it feels like a very cold, emotionless thing. It doesn't feel like there is much of there. It has much of a human element to it. Much like my problem with the Black Mirror episode that we watched, 15 Million Merits. It felt like a highly intellectualized thought experiment, where I was like, okay, yeah, this is clever. And maybe some of these ideas are interesting, but the movie itself, like the plot and the characters, were devoid of any real human spark that would make me want to invest in it. Like The Green Knight, which is surreal and deconstructionist. Sure. I think that Gawain is a really interesting character, and the way he's kind of struggling with honor is really interesting. And so that kind of pulls me back in and motivates me to keep on revisiting it, keep on thinking about it. But this movie doesn't really have that. There's no character that I really, that I find very interesting. There's no conflict that I'm just repeating myself here. It's just the thought experiment is neat, but it's not enough for me.
Well, and I think that's where I kind of disagree with you. And I feel like this is where we end up a lot, is that maybe I'm just like a more emotional person, or I'm like, I'm easier to manipulate emotionally. That I found the reason I liked this movie most of all the Lynch movies I had seen was because it left me with such a potent emotional feeling, that this, the emotion that the movie kind of ends on is guilt, because Betty hires a hitman to kill Rita, that she's so upset that Rita has rejected her, that Rita has decided to, you know, go out with Adam instead, that Rita is doing all these things, that she hires a hitman to kill Rita, and then apparently out of the guilt for that, she kills herself. So the, and I think that kind of informed this watch of the movie, that knowing where it would land emotionally was informing what I was watching for the entirety of the film. And so maybe it's something, you know, watch it two more times, Elliot, and then you'll really get to a place like I am. But I found it to be very emotional and very, I found the characters very interesting. I find the fact that, like you said, interpreting it as the first 2 hours are Betty's idealized dream, it's interesting that, like, in Betty's dream, she portrays herself as, like, the most naive, doe-eyed, like, lamb to the slaughter that could ever possibly have walked into Hollywood. And it's, there's just a lot of moments in the movie that I find very interesting and very compelling, and I can't necessarily congeal all of these moments into one cohesive message or idea that the movie is portraying. But I think this is kind of what David Lynch is very good at, is just creating very emotional images that are difficult to then get behind to get to, like, what's really happening in the movie, which I think is kind of intentional. The sequence where they go to Club Silencio, and this is going to be really pretentious, Elliot. I'm just going to let you know right now.
I can't believe you made fun of me for my interpretation of Tar.
Hey, man, we all have different things that we're ready to go to bat for, okay? The man died. I'm ready to go to bat for David Lynch. Todd Field? Nah, I don't know. Let's, you know, wait until after
maybe,
he's dead.
Yeah, when he's dead, you'll
come around on it. But in Club Silencio, the performers make a point of saying there is no band. Like, what you're seeing is images, and the sound is not being produced by the images. And so that almost feels like the idea of the movie, that it's like you're seeing stuff and you can't necessarily get behind it to what is really occurring, but it's affecting you in some way. And obviously it doesn't count if, you know, it's not affecting you and you feel nothing in relation to it. But for me personally, a lot of the scenes I found very affecting, like the scene where Betty goes in to her audition, and the audition scene just takes on a completely different tone than the way she was rehearsing it earlier, that it's much more kind of perverted than she had originally assigned. She, you know, I think especially now after the Me Too movement and everything that's come out about Hollywood, it takes on a bit of, you know, it's a very gross scene. It feels really gross, and it feels, again, interesting that if this is purely a fantasy of Betty, that she would fantasize getting famous in a way that feels this, like, gross and exploitative. That she would, you know, she's clearly talented. It's an amazing scene acting-wise, in my opinion, from Naomi Watts. But it's interesting that that would be her fantasy. That, and I think I've said before on this podcast, too, that a movie being interesting gets it really far, even if I can't necessarily always find it interesting or explain everything that's interesting about it in one cohesive way.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, man. the stuff in Club Silencio, that kind of stuff, that does nothing for me. Have you ever heard of the painting? I think it's, this is a very foggy memory, but I think it's like of a pipe or something. And the title of the painting is "This Is Not a Pipe," because it's a painting of a pipe. It's a representation of a pipe. Blah blah blah. Stop crediting it.
To be honest,
no, I really dislike stuff like that. Where I'm like, oh yeah, dude, cool. You're so smart. You really got me. That just feels like hollow, self-congratulatory auteur nonsense. And yeah, I just don't really think that Betty is that interesting of a character. I mean, she sees herself she imagines herself as naive and bubbly because that's what she believes herself to be. That's what all manipulative, abusive people think of themselves. They all think that they're just happy-go-lucky, innocent people who have been unfairly maligned by the world. And, I mean, you can make an interesting character study out of a lot of people, but I feel like this amounts to not much more than just 2 hours of, like, saying over 2 hours what could have been said pretty briefly if, like, I don't know, if the coda had been placed at the beginning, and then more, Betty's character could have been explored in more depth. I'm not saying that that's how it should have been, or that, like, that would make for a better movie. I'm just saying that these 2 hours of film are interesting enough, but it seems pretty flat to me. And even if it was the most interesting thing in the world, I would struggle to get involved in it because Betty is just not an interesting or compelling character to me.
Well, I mean, you know, that's your opinion, man.
It sure is.
I think I also want to say that beyond just, you know, I don't want to just keep sitting and talking about things I found compelling about the movie that you didn't. There's not much to be gained in by that. But I do think I want to highlight here,
and
too.
Yet.
That, and yet. I found, beyond just finding what was happening in the plot interesting, I did also think that the cinematography and the music especially went a really long way to contributing to, I'm big on like vibe based movies. I think we talked about this with In the Mood for Love, that I was like, dude, the vibe is just sick. I love being in the vibe of the movie. I thought that the music and the cinematography did so much to contribute. The music that plays when Betty first gets to Hollywood is just such a like, it's music that feels like it would play as you're riding the stairway up to heaven, that it's like, I believe anything is possible and everything is good and amazing, and you know, I just love the world. And the cinematography, there was a lot of times where just very interesting artistic choices. In the first scene in the Winkies, where this guy is describing some dream he had, the camera never stops moving. It is so weird. It feels very like, obviously the whole movie is somewhat dreamlike, because I mean, the movie opens with a shot, doesn't open with a shot, but near to the opening is a shot of just like someone laying their head down on a bed. So the whole movie feels like a little dreamlike, but the sequence in the Winkies with this constantly moving, and not constantly moving in like it's clearly handheld way, it was moving in a way that felt like you were, this is going to be pretentious too, but I can't think of a better way to describe it, that like you're a spirit watching things happen, as opposed to you know, reminding you that it's a camera or something like that. There was also a really neat trick near the end of the movie in that coda that we were talking about, where it's doing a shot reverse shot, which is just the classic shot that you get in a conversation, where it's like, here's one person talking, now here's the other one, here's that person again, here's the other one. It's doing that. It does this sick thing where Betty is imagining that Rita is back in her home and is like talking nicely to her, and then instead of cutting back to Rita like you would expect, it cuts to the other side of Betty, and it is just such a jarring and like upsetting shot because of the way that it was edited, that your brain, right, every time you see shot reverse shot, your brain fills in like, hey, this is what we can expect to be next. And so when it's so aggressively not that, it just goes a long way to contributing to kind of the eeriness of the movie, the surrealness. I also thought the music in the final sequence, when inexplicably those two old people were harassing Betty in her home before she shoots herself, the music was really upsetting to me and kind of made the sequence scarier than I think it had any right to be. So I think the technical aspects went a really long way to contributing to my enjoyment of the movie and connection with the movie in terms of the vibe and emotions that David Lynch was trying to make you feel.
I don't remember any of that, so I guess
gotta,
it just...
Here's what I'm hearing, Elliot, is we gotta rewatch it together.
But see, I can think of no reason why I would ever rewatch this movie, because for 2 hours of it, I mean, that's a long time to be just trying to work towards this ending. Because I think we've made it pretty clear that for us, at least, this movie does not exist, cannot exist without the coda. And I think that its reliance on the coda would make rewatching it just annoying, because the first 2 hours of the movie are annoying. Like, the friendship between Betty and Rita is lame. They have no emotional connection. It is what Betty is dreaming it to be. It's a very shallow, superficial connection that's mainly undergirded by Rita's inexplicable adoration of Betty. And so that's fine for the ending, and it's fine to reflect on, but I don't really want to see that again, because it is lame and it's not engaging. And also, I thought that Rita's performance was quite poor. And to be fair, a lot of that is attributable to the script, which is asking less than nothing of her. Like, in the coda, I think she does much better. And so it really is. It really just has to be the script, because so many times, there were so many times where she is just beaming this gormless, blank expression into the middle distance, like she's trying to telepathically connect with someone across the world. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Why are you just staring into space like an idiot? So I found that very irritating, and I can't imagine that on rewatch I would find it a whole lot more compelling.
Did you like any of the other performances, though? I've already said that I think Rita is doing Laura Haring. Yeah. Is doing exactly what the script is calling for her. She's giving a blank stare to the middle distance. I think you can pretty easily interpret that as, you know, Betty doesn't think much of her, or in her fantasy, she's not giving her much autonomy. But I thought Naomi Watts was really fantastic, outside of just the scene that I already mentioned, the audition scene where she's explicitly acting. I thought in general, she really nailed the, again, naive, doe-eyed, innocent person at the beginning, and then the shift in the coda to this incredibly upset, frustrated, just kind of generally out of sorts person, I thought was really fantastic. And also down to like costuming and makeup, that she almost looked like a different person. It was crazy. And then, yeah, I liked some of the other performers. I thought Justin Theroux as Adam, who, yeah, a lot of his scenes are just him kind of haplessly wandering around as goofy things happen. I thought it was pretty good.
I thought Naomi Watts was fine. I didn't think that it was great. I was reading up on this movie, and I read that there was lots of consternation about her not getting an Oscar nomination or win for this.
Probably nomination or win. I think the only nomination this got was Best Director for Lynch.
Well, anyway, I was like, yeah, that makes total sense to me. I thought, yeah, again, Justin Theroux was fine. Adam was, again, the only thing. He was carrying those first 2 hours on his disheveled Hollywood back. I cannot overemphasize how crucial he was to me not hating this movie initially. Not a whole lot of other major characters. I did want to say that the stuff with the old couple chasing Betty in that very last moment of the movie, I thought that was hilarious. Because those two are not intimidating, and just because they're yelling and there's a strobe light flashing and there's loud music does not make them more intimidating to me. So I just thought that was extremely funny. I thought this movie was well put together in terms of the cinematography. I think that it absolutely nailed that floaty, dreamlike tone, which I think is something that is benefited by another thing, at least, that's benefited by the coda, is that initially I was like, this just feels all wrong. Like, this just feels, well, it feels floaty and dreamlike.
Yeah.
And so when it's revealed, oh, it is a dream. So that makes perfect sense. So yeah, great job, guys.
All right. Well, I don't have much else to say about this movie. Although I do think, I don't know. I'd really love, it feels like there's more things to this movie that I'm missing. And I feel like the interpretation that we're running with, I think is certainly, I've seen in interviews David Lynch saying, you know, any interpretation you have for his movies is legitimate because you have that interpretation and that's how you, the audience, interacted with the film. But it feels like it's too simple, that there's pieces of this interpretation that aren't that don't fit in. For instance, there's a lot of moments in the first 2 hours where like Betty isn't even anywhere, like everything with Adam has very little to do with Betty. And so you could imagine that it's just Betty dreaming that the reason she didn't get the role was because shadowy forces outside of her control forced Adam to take a different actress for the Sylvia North story. But like, why? So I don't know. This feels like a movie that I would love to, my dream honestly was, I was like, I'd love to watch this movie with a bunch of people and just be able to, like, a bunch of people who also were interested in interpreting the movie, and to be able to, like, pause the movie and explain things to each other and say, like, hey, I think this, that sounds like,
oh,
a ton of
fun. Oh my gosh.
Well, see?
Sounds terrible. That sounds annoying.
Well, see, this is what I'm saying, is it feels like there's a very clear vision behind the movie, and I feel like on this second rewatch, I got more of that vision, and so it made me enjoy it more. And so my dream is, like, I would love to keep understanding more of what's going on in this movie. And I don't want to watch just like 8 YouTube videos, because I would much rather do it with a bunch of friends. That sounds way more fun than listening to some nerd on the internet tell me what they think. That, although not you, the audience, you should keep listening to these nerds on the internet.
Well, Nathan, you have fun with that, and I wish you luck. I myself, I will not be attending. I mean, we when we watch movies together, we'll make comments. And there was the time when I just completely failed to understand the twist in Westworld that I asked you to pause it so I could be caught up.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah, but good Lord, just pausing a movie constantly for people to talk about it. I could never.
It's like a book club for a movie.
Yeah, but book clubs meet after everyone has already read the book so they can talk about it.
Sometimes they do, like, you know, read a chapter, then talk about it. So it would be like that. Watch a couple scenes, pause it, talk about it.
My goodness.
Sounds fun to me. All right.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, that's fine. That's perfectly legitimate. Right. That's not my thing. Neither is this movie, I think. I don't think I have much else to say. I've said my piece, and I got nothing.
All right, well, let's get to ratings then. I feel like I've said my piece. I guess I haven't said any negatives. I guess my negatives would be there are pieces. Well, I'm not about to give it a 10, so I have to add on the negatives to explain why. There's pieces of the movie that don't make sense to me. I think the weird trash witch thing, I cannot even fathom where that would connect. And if it does someday, then yeah, my score for the movie would go up. But as it stands now, I think this movie is really interesting. I find it very compelling. I find all the different pieces to be really intriguing. Like I just said, it feels like a puzzle that I'd be very excited to piece together. But as it stands right now, it's like an incomplete puzzle that I'm a little frustrated. There appears to be pieces that don't have anything to do with stuff. So that's why I'm going to give this movie an 8.3 out of 10. I think it's a really strong, interesting, emotional experience.
Wow, that's lower than I was expecting.
Oh, sorry.
it's your thing, man. I mean, I thought that the trash lady was like death, right? Like death personified or something. That's why she keeps on interrupting things, and that's why she's got the blue cube at the end.
Yeah.
But I don't. I mean, I don't even care. So
maybe Betty kills herself out of, you know, this is what I find interesting about the movie. Maybe the reason Betty disappears before Vida when they get the blue cube to open up is because Betty kills herself before the hitman has killed Rita, and Rita's actually still alive. And, like, Betty just killed herself out of guilt, but the hitman failed to kill her. Although that, wow. Well, I don't know. Anyway, Elliot, do
your mind boggles. I think that this movie is neat, but, and I mean, the coda saved it, but ultimately, I think that this movie lacks heart. Tar, The Green Knight, the movie that I'll be recommending for this, so I won't mention it by name. All of those movies have something at their core, usually just like an interesting character to keep me coming back, to keep me invested, to answer the question, why should I care? Beyond just asking the question of like, what does it all mean? I think why should you care is the primary question this movie doesn't, it struggles to answer. So yeah, I'm glad I watched it. I didn't hate it. I can't see myself ever watching it again. I'm going to give it a C+.
All right. Well, let's get to those recommendations. I'm interested to know what you're going to recommend, but
you're not going to like it.
Oh boy. Well, I'm going to recommend another, maybe an even artsier movie than this movie. It's a foreign film, so that makes it artsier automatically. But that's going to be Ingmar Bergman's Persona. This is another movie about two women whose relationship seems interesting, seems as though there's more layers to it than were originally presented with. It is ostensibly about a woman who's in a hospital for some unknown reason, who then has to, at the advice of her nurse, goes to like a beachside resort or like a beachside cabin sort of thing, and they're both there together. I found this kind of for the same reasons I found Mulholland Drive interesting. I think Persona ends on a really interesting emotional note that I haven't rewatched it yet, but I'd love to rewatch it and see how that connects to the rest of the movie. Much like Mulholland Drive, it's a surreal film. There's sections of the movie that seem to be just bizarre interludes that don't have anything to do with anything. But it's a really interesting movie for a lot of the same reasons as Mulholland Drive. I can't imagine that it wasn't an influence, or at the very least, something Lynch had seen and had in mind as he was making Mulholland Drive. The similarities are too close to for it to be a coincidence, in my opinion. But yeah, so if you've seen Mulholland Drive and you really liked it, or if you're a big David Lynch fan and you want to see some more movies that are similar to the Lynchian sort of sensibilities, I would say Ingmar Bergman's Persona is a fantastic place to start.
Interesting. I haven't seen that movie. That sounds terrible. And I don't even hate Ingmar Bergman, but that, yeah, I don't know about that. But I can't say. This is not me saying don't watch that, because I don't know. I haven't seen it. My recommendation, I kind of hinted at it with the whole Coens thing. My recommendation is going to be Inside Llewyn Davis. Now, I've chosen this movie because I think that Inside Llewyn Davis is the strangest, most surreal movie of the Coens that I like. Barton Fink is the strangest, most surreal, but I hate that. Inside Llewyn Davis has the same kind of dreamlike, uncanny feel to it. If you've seen the movie, you'll know that everything's kind of blurry, kind of washed out, because of the way it's been filmed. The difference, I think, is that the central character, Llewyn Davis, is very compelling. That this movie, even if you were to set aside its ideas, you would still have, in my opinion, a compelling character study of a man beset by a whole host of self-destructive tendencies. So the movie, I don't want to describe it too much to give it away, but I think that if you liked Mulholland Drive for the surrealism, for the strangeness, and for the sense of dread that sometimes comes into play, I think that Inside Llewyn Davis will serve you very well. And if you felt burned by Mulholland Drive and wanted something more character-focused, more that has the smarts but doesn't skimp on the key, the, I don't even know what word I was trying to say there, that doesn't skimp on the characters and just the formal elements, I would say Inside Llewyn Davis should be your first port of call.
Yeah, I would say it shouldn't be. I don't like Inside Llewyn Davis at all. And interestingly, for like all of the reasons that you didn't like Mulholland Drive, like I could not be bothered to care a lick about Llewyn Davis. I don't care about his stupid problems. I don't care about his stupid cat. I don't really care for Inside Llewyn Davis at all.
Well, that's because you have poor taste. But don't worry, it's fine. Life is hard and full of disappointments, after all.
Good job. That brings us to the end of this episode. So send us an email. Do you have an interpretation of Mulholland Drive and you think we're way off base? Do you want to come to my super fun Mulholland Drive watch party? Send us an email if you have a request or just a thought that you want to share. The email is always in the description of the episode and the description of our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back next week with another brand new review. The mind boggles to imagine what we could possibly review next week. So be sure to tune in and hear our thoughts. And we hope you have a great week in between.